It's a piece of Saturday. Let's join Professor Buzzkill as he dumps on people from history who deserve more shame and opprobrium.
Hello there, Buzzkillers. Once again, it's your favorite type of episode that we have here at the Buzzkill Institute. It's a newish kind of episode type, but it's piece of Saturday. And people have been emailing us and tweeting about it and everything, and everyone's having a great time. And so, of course, we're back with your favorite Buzzkiller, Professor Nash, to talk about a new POS for these times. Professor, who is that? Well, first of all, how are you? Because as our listeners keep saying, you're definitely the antithesis of the POS.
A piece of gold. I don't know. I'm a POG. I'm
something P-O-G.
Else. P-O-G. Yeah. Thank you. By the way, I'm doing great, to answer your question. I'm doing great, yeah. Even though I just did some research on this guy here, who is a real POS. And his name is Ante Pavlich, not a household name. And I just have to make it clear that the population of POSs in history is quite large, and not all of them are the same. We've done Roy Cohn, we've done G. Gordon Liddy, and they end up looking like the Dalai Lama compared to this guy here.
Yeah, we should say to the listeners that make sure the Buzzlings aren't in the room when you listen to the show, and if you're in the car, skip to another episode, because we're not going to use any swear words apart from the famous S one. But it's really a very, very brutal story.
Yeah, there's some real grim aspects to this, so people have been warned.
Yeah. So who is this?
Yeah. So Ante Pavlich, Pavelic. He's actually got quite a long and actually a very good Wikipedia page. I actually looked at.
Oh wow.
Prep for this. He's a Croat. He's Croatian. He was born in 1889, which is fitting. That's the same year as his later hero, Adolf Hitler. Both born 1889. Right. He's born in Herzegovina, which is in the Balkans, a part of the former Yugoslavia. Now it's part of Bosnia-Herzegovina. As an adult, he became a lawyer and then became an extreme Croatian nationalist politician in the post-World War I Kingdom of Yugoslavia. Let's keep in mind that Yugoslavia really doesn't exist until 1919, when it is created out of the former multi-ethnic Austro-Hungarian Empire, which was destroyed in World War I.
Yeah, and in fact, kind of means Yugoslavia, kind of means all of the Slavs.
Correct, yeah, even though it's much smaller than the whole Austro-Hungarian Empire, it is itself, as we'll see, quite a mess of conflicting national and ethnic groups. Yeah. Very, very complicated. So in 1929, he forms a radical nationalist group in Croatia called the Ustasha, so in the Croatian part of Yugoslavia. If you picture sort of the spectrum of nationalists, these are the most extreme possible Croatian nationalists. Their goal is to create a 100% pure nationalist Croatian state, and they are willing to use any means necessary, including violence, including assassination, including other killings, to achieve this goal. So they really are the Croatian, I mean, at best, the Croatian version of the Nazi Party in Germany. They are very much analogous. So they do make the Ustasha, they make several attempts on the life of the Yugoslavian King Alexander in the 1930s. He is ultimately assassinated, I believe, in 1934, but it's by a Bulgarian. But it wasn't for want of trying by the Ustasha. In fact, this was a Bulgarian who was cooperating with the Ustasha. So Ustasha had tried and failed. This guy tried and succeeded. Pavlich, for understandable reasons, spends much of the 1930s organizing his group, but doing so from exile. Because he's being hunted by the Yugoslavian police, and so he spends a lot of time in places like Italy, where, you know, and Italy is fascist, so they sort of are friendly toward him. He also spends some time in prison.
Oh, all right. Okay. In Italy?
Yes, in Italy.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's a point where the Yugoslavians lean on the Italians to sort of imprison him, and they do briefly.
Okay, but this isn't what makes him necessarily a POS. Why is he so famous, or as we should say, infamous?
Right, yeah. Up until this point, he hasn't done anything that a lot of other European nationalists haven't done. His opportunity to become a real POS on sort of an epic scale only comes in World War II. Here we have to fast forward to April 1941, where the Germans invade Yugoslavia. And remember, this is when the Germans are on a roll. They really seem unstoppable. They conquer Yugoslavia in 11 days. And then they break, they break up Yugoslavia into various either occupation zones or puppet states. It's super complicated. We're not going to get into it. But one of the states they create is called the Independent State of Croatia. It's important. If people should look at a map if they're confused. This is not just consist of Croatia, or doesn't consist. Oh, okay. Right, doesn't consist of what is Croatia today. It includes Croatia. So this is the northwestern part of Yugoslavia. Its capital is Zagreb. This independent state of Croatia was actually much larger. It includes a lot of other. In fact, I'm going to guess it's roughly half the size of Yugoslavia. So it includes, among other things, Bosnia-Herzegovina, which is not primarily a Croatian area. So in other words, it's called the independent state of Croatia, but it doesn't, not even close, consist only of Croatians. So its total population is about 6.3 million people. Only 3.3 million of those are Croatians. So slightly more than half. This quote-unquote independent state of Croatia also includes about 1.9 million Serbs. And that's one of the basic conflicts here is Serbs versus Croatians. Croatians, they use the Roman alphabet. They are Catholic, whereas Serbs use the Cyrillic alphabet, and they are Eastern Orthodox Christians. So there are all these layers of the ethnic rivalry here. So 1.9 million of the 6.3 million are Serbs. There are about 700,000 Muslims. There are 150,000 Germans, right? Part of the German question. There are Germans all over the place, not in Germany.
Oh, all right, yeah.
And there are about 40,000 Jews. So if you're going to put this kind of multi-ethnic state in the hands of such extreme Croatian nationalists, you are asking for trouble.
I imagine, yeah. I'd imagine.
So Pavelić is put in charge with the approval of the Nazis. He takes the title Poglavnik, P-O-G-L-A-V-N-I-K, Poglavnik, and he's like a lot of the other European fascists, like Hitler is the Führer, Mussolini is Il Duce, right? It basically means leader or head man. There are various ways to translate it, but it's a new title that just means the head dude in charge, basically. Now, at the time, keep in mind, he is in power, but his base, his organization, the Ustasha, at that point, April 1941, they consist only of basically 900 sworn members of the group, and then maybe 40,000 supporters in the whole population. So it is a...
Oh, right. Well, so that's not... Yeah.
It's a tiny, tiny radical fringe group. I mean, at least the Nazis could claim some sort of base of mass support. You know, this is... If you have 40,000 supporters among 3.3 million Croats. I mean, it is a tiny, tiny little splinter group. And they get busy right away. They start passing all sorts of laws. For example, they ban the use of the Cyrillic alphabet. They implement a series of anti-Jewish laws modeled very closely on the Nazi Nuremberg laws. And these are the laws that basically from 1935 in Nazi Germany, really, really important in the Holocaust, that, for example, declare German Jews to be non-citizens. And it forbids the marriage, intermarriage of Jews and non-Jews, etc. So these are all put in place by the Poglavnik Ante Pavelić in the independent state of Croatia.
Okay, now all this is very bad, but I assume, in fact, I know because we've talked about this, but it gets a lot worse.
It gets a lot worse, and it gets a lot worse immediately. Interesting comparison is Nazi Germany. The Nazis take years to sort of gradually, with all sorts of fits and starts, spill out their Holocaust or their policies that persecute Jews. The Ustasha waste no time at all. They immediately deploy paramilitary squads throughout the independent state of Croatia to launch an ethnic cleansing campaign against Serbs, against Roma, who are sometimes called, inappropriately called gypsies, but the Roma people, and also Jews. Pavelić's interior minister at the time says, and I'm quoting, "If you can't kill Serbs or Jews, you are an enemy of the state." End quote.
My God, that's about as severe. If you're not with us, you're against
pretty
us.
Pretty much. Well, not only that, but I mean, in other words, if you're with us, you have to be a perpetrator.
You have to kill.
I mean, I don't think the Nazis ever said anything quite that extreme. I mean, obviously, always problems with those comparisons. But basically, these paramilitary squads, they roam the country and commit one massacre after another, in some cases slaughtering entire communities, men, women, children, no survivors. The policies and the actions are so monstrous that even the Germans protested. And how bad do you have to be? Even the Germans protested, which briefly forced a slowdown, not a stop or a cessation, but a slowdown to some of these policies. And keep in mind that the Germans, you know, the Germans share a lot of these goals, especially when it comes to Jews and Roma. They're not quite so vicious when it comes to Serbs. But the Germans have just invaded this country, and they're looking to set up, you know, effective administration and, right, and sort of right, order right. and sort of, you know, bring the economy back so people can support themselves and that sort of thing. These policies of the Ustasha run completely counter to that. And that's why throughout World War II, the Ustasha are going to be opposed, not, as we'll see, not by Hitler, but by a lot of Hitler's henchmen, especially in the army.
Right.
Where they're constantly going to come into conflict with the Ustasha, because the Ustasha, basically, they are just slaughtering people right, left, and center and creating all sorts of problems, right, with refugees and etc. So the brutality is also so extreme that it greatly strengthens the anti-Axis partisan movements in Yugoslavia. So this is, in some ways, from the standpoint of Germans or Italians, who also occupy a lot of Yugoslavia, this is a practical issue. They might share the bigotry and the hatred, but this is one of the reasons why the Germans and the Italians are constantly dissatisfied with Pavelich, is because they see their jobs becoming much more difficult. Because, I mean, look at it this way. If you're a Serb and you're being hunted down by the Ustasha, you may see now that you have no choice but to join, for example, Tito's partisans fighting against the Germans.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just as a matter of self-defense, right? If you're being hunted down like dogs, you feel, well, okay, I got nothing to lose, so I'll join the resistance. And then the Germans have to, Germans and Italians then have to deploy more military force against that resistance. So in the big picture, this sort of persecution and these mass murders don't stop. And that's partly because already in June 1941, Pavelich visits Adolf Hitler at the Berghof in southern Germany, right? This is Hitler's mountain retreat. And by the way, just so people know, lots of people visited Hitler there before and during the war. And this is one of the ways that Hitler shows his approval for certain people. So you get an invitation to the Berghof. And it's sort of like an audience with the president or the prime minister in a lot of countries, right? This is something you want because it shows how important you are. So Pavelich is delighted, and he visits with Hitler several times during the war, including as late as 1944. But he visits Hitler in the Berghof, and during this meeting, Hitler urges him to continue his policy of, quote, national intolerance. That's the term Hitler uses. National intolerance. He tells Pavelich to continue this for 50 years.
50 years. That must mean that Hitler is thinking of that form of national intolerance being like his form of national intolerance,
exactly.
Which means concentration camps and all the rest.
Right. From what I've read, that Hitler saw in Pavelich sort of a kindred spirit. And let me just add parenthetically, this is another case where the Nazi Europe or the Nazi occupation policies are often at cross purposes. So on the ground in Croatia, you have a lot of Germans, and Italians and others who are trying to sort of contain Pavelich and his actions, but they're being undermined by their boss, Adolf Hitler, who is basically telling Pavelich to keep it up. You're doing a great job. You're engaging in ethnic cleansing of the type that I am doing in the rest of Europe. So Hitler's basically satisfied, and that's why this guy is allowed to stay in power. So you mentioned concentration camps, and basically there comes a point very early on where the Ustasha have filled their jails and prisons to the point of overflow. And so they do build a concentration camp. It's like a lot of the Nazi concentration camps. It's not technically a single camp. It has sub-camps. But it's at a place called Jasenovac. I don't know if it's still there. The U.S. Holocaust Museum had a separate online exhibit about Jasenovac. If people want to learn more about this, it is a notorious place. A lot of people haven't heard of it. It's one of the most important concentration camps in Hitler's Europe that you've never heard of, I think a lot of people haven't heard of. People have heard of Auschwitz and Belsen and Dachau and Birkenau and all those places. But they probably haven't heard of this one. It's infamous for a reason. Anywhere between 80,000 and 100,000 people died there. Once again, mainly Serbs, Roma, Jews, also some political prisoners. And unlike in Hitler's camps, certainly unlike in Hitler's death camps, which were basically factories of death, From what I've read, most of these people were killed manually. In other words, one by one, they were killed with sort of hand weapons, like knives or hammers or axes. Oh.
So not gas chambers, not
firing squads. In fact, and you mentioned that gas chambers, and of course, if you look at the Holocaust, one of the purposes of gas chambers is just to create some distance, not only to create efficiency, but to create some distance between most of the killers and their victims. Here, there's no attempt to do that. This is all face-to-face killing of individuals, between 80 and 100,000.
It's dehumanizing. And I should add,
absolutely. And so I should add that in case people are wondering, because you can imagine someone like Pavlich sort of just issuing orders, but on a day-to-day basis being remote from this process and sort of the reality of mass killing. And that is not the case. And this is one of the things that makes him additionally a POS. He's already pretty epic in that regard. But there's this, this is in several books. It's a pretty infamous anecdote. And once again, I warn buzzkillers, this is not for the faint of heart. But basically, at one point he was visited by an Italian journalist, visited in his office. And the journalist noticed on Pavlich's desk a large wicker basket with a lid, and the journalist got a glimpse inside it, and it looked like it was filled with shelled oysters.
Right.
And the journalist asked Pavlich, are they Dalmatian oysters, you know, the Dalmatian coast on the Adriatic Sea?
Right.
And Pavlich's response was, and I'm quoting, "It is a present from my loyal Ustashis, 40 pounds of human eyes."
Oh, God.
End quote. So these look like oysters, and of course it didn't occur to this journalist that they would be human eyes. But these were basically souvenirs that were collected during these mass killings, and they were sent to Pavlich as a trophy.
So this is POS, and the P could also mean psychopath.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So just to wrap this up in terms of its human cost, under Pavlich, the Ustasha murdered, and the numbers, as always, the numbers vary. Some of these numbers were a lot higher earlier, and they've come down a bit, but they're still appalling. The Ustasha murdered up to about 300,000 Serbs,
right?
30,000 Jews, which is about 75% of Croatia's or this area of Yugoslavia's pre-war Jewish population. So about 3 in 4 Jews under Pavlich died. That's a very high rate, much higher than most other places in Europe. And they killed about 25,000 Roma, which, depending on the numbers you look at, seems to be at least 60% of the Roma population in this independent state of Croatia. So in the bigger picture, now Yugoslavia generally is ravaged by World War II. It's often overlooked, right? They had this massive partisan campaign. There was ethnic cleansing. The Germans did a lot of this themselves. It wasn't just the Ustasha. The SS was active there. But basically, big picture, Yugoslavia loses 1.5 million dead in World War II.
Right.
Which is about 11% of its pre-war population. And a lot of this is on Ante Pavlich. Not all of it, but a lot of it. So he's one.
11% of a population is an enormous number when you're talking about dead, not just casualties, dead.
Yes, it's catastrophic loss. Once again, for context, the American Civil War, where you had only Americans fighting and dying, cost the United States about 2% of its population. So just people have an idea of how devastating the Americans in the audience have a concept of how devastating that was. This is much, much worse. And once again, a lot of this is because of the ethnic cleansing and mass murder of Pavlich and the Ustasha.
But of course, the Axis loses the war. What happens to Pavlich?
Right. What is his fate? So he flees, not surprisingly, 1945 via the infamous rat line. Which this is basically the loosely organized network that was established right after World War II to get war criminals and Holocaust perpetrators of various stripes out of Europe and often to places like Australia or most famously Latin America. Pavlich is one of these people. Right. And by the way, he like a lot of other people, also took his time. He spent some time in Austria. He spent a lot of time. He was under a fake passport, but he spent a lot of time being protected in Italy by the Catholic Church. And then he ends up in Argentina, the Argentina of Juan Perón, one of these Latin American dictators who often sheltered or tolerated the presence of Germans and other wanted people from Hitler's Europe. He was actually briefly served as Juan Perón's head of security, and then he got sort of a grunt job as a laborer. The only good news, if I can call it, the only good news in this whole story is that In Argentina, years later, in 1957, he is the victim of an assassination attempt. There is a Serb who, like a lot of Serbs, wants payback for what happened to them.
Oh, sure.
So he's not killed immediately. He is seriously injured. He lingers for a couple of years. He ends up dying in 1959, dying of those wounds in 1959 in Spain. He ended up in Franco's Spain, where he was also given asylum, basically. So unfortunately, this is part of the story where after World War II, a lot of people like this were either not pursued very vigorously or they were protected one way or another by various regimes. So, yeah.
Well, you know, Buzzkillers, what we, you know, they're obviously, you know, there's Hitler and Stalin and Mao and colossal POSs. One of the things we wanted to do with this POS Saturday episode type is to bring to light more people who are like that. It might have been sort of... They're not as well known because their deeds have been steamrolled by the awfulness of the rest of World War II. But what is your sort of bottom line conclusion about this POS? All
right, bottom line on POS Ante Pavelich. So I'd just make a couple of points. One, and I think this often gets lost, because if people either know about or remember these explosions of violence and ethnic cleansing in the Balkans in the 1990s, in places like Bosnia and Kosovo and places like that. He's relevant here because the evil deeds of the Croatian Ustasha, they contributed mightily to the existing ethno-religious tensions, the mutual hatred, the desire for revenge throughout the former Yugoslavia that will help explain some of those later... You know, what happened in Bosnia in 1992, that was pretty much the worst genocide in Europe since Hitler. So these were some, obviously not nearly the scale, but these were some nasty, nasty events. And this is partly people, it's much more complicated than I've led on here, but it's partly people reacting to the history of misdeeds, the history of ethnic cleansing that goes way, way back. And Ante Pavelich played a big, big role in that. So he's actually, as a historical figure, his effect and the effect of the Ustasha lingers for a long, long time and has ripple effects decades later. The other point I would make is, and this I think is really, really important to remember about the Holocaust in general, is that not all World War II mass murderers or Holocaust perpetrators were Germans.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Throughout the Nazi killing machine, the system of concentration camps and death camps, they relied the shootings in the east, right? The Einsatzgruppen, where they shot people out in the woods in front of big pits. In every stage, the Germans had a great deal of assistance, and in this case, when it comes to Ante Pavelich, this included in some cases help that was at least as extreme as the Nazis were. And that required no coaxing whatsoever. Let me just make that point clear, that when the Ustasha come to power, it's not like they sat around, right, what should we do, and then Hitler gave them instructions. Not at all.
Yeah.
They were, this is going to sound glib, they were self-starters. They on their own, it's like all this pent-up rage was allowed to be released immediately, and then, like I said, in some cases and in some ways, the Germans actually asked them to dial it back. So... he really needs to be understood as an important part of the sort of the non-German part of the Holocaust.
Well, it's in some ways it's hard to say thank you, Professor, for enlightening us about this, but we have to say thank you because it is something more people should know about, the not only complexity of all this horror, but it's much more widespread than people think. So thank you for telling us about this tremendous POS, Ante Pavelich.
You are welcome. Yeah, as you say, sometimes history is super, super grim, but it's no less important because of it.
That's right. And Buzzkillers, we'll talk to you next week.